Between 1865 and 1877, continuing Yankee ex-Confederate competition over Reconstruction below the Mason-Dixon line involved three principal constituencies: Southern white, Southern black, and Northern white, each holding strong beliefs. The ex-Confederate worldview, which took full control in 1877, merits recognition as an extraordinary venture in successful myth-making. But it is important to bring up Northern religious overreaching during and after the war. Zealous Northerners, who looked back on pre-war Southern secession from national church bodies as simply another dimension of Confederate sinfulness, sought to reconstruct the South's tainted churches along with its tainted politics and government. The fierce response of most Southern churchmen, in turn, rested on the adamant conviction that God still favored the South and its churches. Slavery as an institution and secession were not sinful, though most admitted that some abuses had existed in the practice of slavery. Since Northern denominations were hopelessly political and radical, the Southern denominations had a duty to preserve the gospel untainted. Moreover, because Northerners and freed people controlled much of the political and economic life of the Reconstruction South, Southern evangelicals had to maintain their churches as bastions of regional identity. Southern unwillingness to make any apology or compromise had been hardened by wartime excesses. In Rebuilding Zion, Daniel Stowell described how federal forces destroyed 26 Baptist churches in Virginia alone. Between 90 and 100 Presbyterian churches were seriously damaged or entirely destroyed throughout the South. Approximately one half of these were in the Synod of Virginia. All of the churches in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Knoxville, Tennessee, and Fredericksburg, Virginia, were damaged or destroyed by federal armies. Other indignities included the so-called invasion of the South by Northern denominations, especially Methodists. They sought to take over church buildings and recruit local congregations, aided by federal War Department orders permitting seizure of Southern church properties. Even Lincoln had difficulty halting these practices. Angry memories, old and new, spurred white membership in the ex-Confederate Baptist, Methodist, and Presbyterian denominations. During the late 1860s and 1870s, by Stowell's calculations, these three churches experienced dramatic increases in membership, well in excess of overall white population growth. This provided a unique glimpse of how average white Southerners reacted to competing visions of religious reconstruction. New Sunday schools, seminaries, religious publications, and denominational colleges further supported the white conservative movement. By the mid-1870s, Northern denominations and missionaries looking to reconstruct Dixie religiously knew they faced defeat. In the contest for white Christians, by one assessment, the Southern churches won an overwhelming victory as they grew far more rapidly than the Northern churches proselytizing in the South. Recruitment by Northern denominations among whites was successful only in bitterly divided eastern Tennessee and another dozen counties elsewhere in southern Appalachia. Overall, the centrality of the religious factor suggests a second informal ballot conducted in church pews on whether Southern theopolitic would sustain its antebellum hold. By and large, the Southern clergy prevailed, effectively employing their pulpits, church media, and educational institutions. In the eyes of Southern true believers, a defeated country recast itself as a righteous republic. Northern pressures on behalf of freed people slackened. By 1875, Walt Whitman, the poet and wartime Lincoln supporter, had come to view racial relations through an essentially Southern lens. The black domination, he argued, but little above the beasts, viewed as a temporary, deserved punishment for their Southern whites' slavery and secession sins, may perhaps be admissible, but as a permanency, of course, is not to be considered for a minute. Critiques of the corruption in some Reconstruction governments that were imposed on the South likewise weakened national support, as did hostile depictions of the evils of Yankee money chasing and the Northern cities full of immigrants, crime, and tenements. As Southerners re-entered their unreconstructed churches and rejected the party of abolitionism and Reconstruction, ex-Confederates recaptured control of their state governments. Tennessee in 1869, Virginia in 1869, North Carolina in 1870, Georgia in 1871, Alabama and Arkansas in 1874, Mississippi in 1876, and Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana in 1877. True believers compared the reprieve to the redemption God granted to Israel, an analogy infuriating to Northerners aware how much the outcome also owed to violence, lynchings, and the Ku Klux Klan. Historian Stowell has traced the terminology. White Southern evangelicals described the end of Reconstruction as a redemption, a term that evoked a sense of regaining control of their political destinies, which had for too long been in the hands of usurpers. This favorite euphemism of the white Democrats, as Kenneth M. Stamp described it, had distinctively religious overtones. Although the first usage of the term remains obscure, Southerners were employing it at least from the time that the first Southern state, Tennessee, was redeemed in 1869-70. After redemption, myth-making moved toward a mock zenith, which probably came in 1915, when a pro-Ku Klux Klan movie, D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, enjoyed a special showing in the White House. It reportedly gained praise from President Woodrow Wilson, who had attended Johns Hopkins University with the book's author, Thomas Dixon, Jr. However, even critics of the Southern record, such as David Goldfield, cite the favored biblical analogies in their analyses without sarcasm, because that was how the majority of white Southerners spoke and thought, wrongly or otherwise. No one should be surprised, then, that Dixie has bred so many historians. It is said that when Southerners aren't going to church, they're cherishing old grudges, burnishing Civil War statues, or remembering something. The Southern Baptist Convention in particular has been shaped by what local people call the backward glance.